Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk about living the food life in Philadelphia and beyond. This week, we're talking about brothy soups, papaya salad, and potluck clubs. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. So, Joy, did you see the news that the new Whole Foods in Bryant Park in Manhattan has a produce butcher? Have you seen this?
I did see it. But for those who didn't, can you explain how the produce butcher operates?
So essentially, it is a staff person at this Whole Foods who will take your chosen vegetables, up to 5 pounds of something, and will clean it, prep it, dice it, chop it, de-stem it, peel it, whatever you want to have done to this produce, they will do it for you. So that when you get home, all you have to do is open up your bag or your containers and get cooking.
It's like somewhere beyond what we already have in the vegetable aisle prepped in like a meal kit.
Yeah. And part of me thinks, well, this is kind of brilliant because you get exactly what you want. You don't have to compromise. You can say, you know, what I really need here is, you know, de-stemmed kale that's clean and torn and dried. And then all I'm going to do is go make a kale salad. Or I need these onions, but I want them in half moons, not diced, whatever. So like the concept is good. And I do feel like if this is the thing that gets you cooking, then fantastic. Like if this is the thing that, you know, if doing your vegetable prep is the thing that prevents you from making dinner and this is the thing that gets you to the stove, amen.
Yeah, I'm totally in favor of it.
And I was actually a little bit surprised that there was so much backlash that people were like, oh my God, I can't believe you can't, you know, dice your own vegetables. Would I use a service like this? I don't know if I would personally.
I might. Would you? I'm thinking about in the summer when you want to have like a giant, especially like one of those like Asian type salads with like a million julienne vegetables in them. And it takes you like an hour to chop everything. Or, you know, butternut squash is certainly something I would rather somebody else deal with. I would probably use it.
Yeah, I'll confess. I mean, there have been times in life when I've bought the bags of peeled and pre-chopped butternut squash so that I can just go saute an onion and open up the bags and dump them in to make soup. Like, that's legitimate.
True, but if you have a vegetable butcher, you can say, can you set aside the seeds and string for me? Because I like to use that to make a broth. But anyway, I don't know. I'm for it. I'm going on the record as saying I'm for it.
I know. I actually, when I read it, I thought, why didn't they bring this to the new Whole Foods in Philly?
I mean, would I use it every single time? Absolutely not. Yeah. But could I see myself using it occasionally? Definitely.
Yeah. Well, and as recipe developers, I can definitely see us, you know, taking advantage of something like this.
Oh, yeah. Who needs a culinary intern when you have the Whole Foods vegetable butcher?
Yeah. So I think the verdict is that we're pretty pro produce butchers here. And we'd love to hear what you guys think. If you have any opinion about this, if this is a service that if your local Whole Foods rolled it out, would you use it?
I don't see it rolling out at a lot of Whole Foods. It must be very expensive.
It must be. Although I guess it really is just one more staff person, you know, and I feel like there are a lot of people doing a lot of things at Whole Foods anyway. So
true.
I wonder what like the backup is, like how quickly they can do your produce, like, you know, I mean, it would change the way you shopped because you'd have to get your produce, have a plan, and get it over there while you finish your other shopping.
Oh, the whole time we've been talking about this, I've been imagining if we did have it in Philly, me going at like a Tuesday morning, you know, so that it wouldn't be busy.
Yeah.
Or the least busy it could be.
And, you know, it isn't too surprising that Whole Foods has introduced this, that since they already offer other sort of services where you can have like, you know, meat butchered the way you want it to be or, you know, particular pieces of cheese or, you know, your deli meat sliced any way you want it. So it doesn't seem extreme. I kind of like it.
We'll see what happens. Maybe it'll grow.
Yeah.
What have you been eating for dinner this week?
I've been making a lot of soups. And I don't know if anybody remembers this, but a few weeks back when we were talking about sort of the, you know, we were inspired by Kristen Donnelly's post about the adult secrets, the kitchen secrets that you'd learned. And I mentioned that I don't always make good use of my chicken stock. And I realized that I was thinking about it all wrong. And so I'm now making much better use of it because I've decided that a brothy soup is a perfectly legitimate dinner. So whenever I made soup in the past, I've always felt like it had to be really hearty. Like it had to have a ton of stuff. There needed to be more like vegetable matter than broth. The broth was always sort of the thing that held it all together, but it wasn't the star player. And so what I decided is that I was going to start making more soups where the broth was sort of the star of the show, and the things in the broth were the supporting characters. And it has suddenly made me appreciate that chicken stock, and I've made much better use of the stock I've made because I am valuing it as an integral character in
my
soup.
What kind of soups have you been making that puts the broth in a starring role?
Well, so often when I make soup, I start by sautéing some vegetables. Mm-hmm. And what I'm doing for these brothy soups is instead I start by heating the broth. And I, because it's already flavorful, it's already delicious, and then I start building the flavor in the broth as opposed to doing it with a sauté. So I will, you know, shred some raw chicken and then mm-hmm. poach the chicken gently in the stock. And then I'll add maybe a handful of cooked pasta or a little bit of rice or some beans. And then a bunch of like really flavorful aromatics. So like perhaps some cilantro or parsley, some diced shallots or green onions, so that it turns into something where the broth gets flavor from these things and they add interest, but still it's sort of like a slurpy brothy experience.
Right.
And it's been so delicious. And so I know this is nothing new, but it's, for me, it was a really useful way to get out of my patterns, my soup making patterns, and shake it up a little.
Does it inspire you to make more broth?
It does. Because now I'm like, oh, I want to do more of these soups, and I want to have this really flavorful broth. And this is the sort of thing where you want a homemade high quality broth, because if you're just going to Better Than Bouillon, it's not going to taste very good.
Right. I also like and use Better Than Bouillon, but yeah. It's not the same.
No, and I mean, it's something that I use a lot in my soup making, but I use it again as like a supporting character to just give the liquid in the pot a little bit more flavor. But when you're actually sort of depending on the broth to be the primary flavor, you want it to be better.
Right. I mean, as I've said before on this podcast, I'm happy to drink delicious homemade chicken stock out of a mug.
Yeah.
You know? Another soup that I love that sort of, I'm just thinking about it right now because it is, broth is the star of the show.
Yeah.
Tortellini on brodo.
Ooh, yeah.
Which I've made at home and I've had at restaurants, and you really want to have a robust, flavorful chicken stock for that. And it's really as simple as heating up your stock, floating a, you know, some, I like, you know, I like to pick up some fresh tortellini at the supermarket, pre-made fresh tortellini, and like herbs and a little squeeze of lemon and maybe a little cheese. It's really, really satisfying.
Sounds really good. But yeah, so I think that it's been nice to realize that what I was simply doing is not thinking about the broth and in the right way in order to make good use of it.
Or, you know, the way you were thinking about it, you just prioritized other aspects of the soup, which there's always a time and place for. But broth is, I don't know, I think it's a really special ingredient.
It absolutely is. And what's nice, too, is that once the broth or the stock is done, it's so quick to make these soups. Where, you know, the other one I really have enjoyed is even just heating it up, wilting some spinach in, and then poaching some eggs in it, and then spooning it out, and then you just kind of break the egg into it, and it gets all creamy.
It's delicious.
And so easy. It is, you know, that's something I might make for lunch.
Especially this time of year when it's just cold and it feels like winter is never going to end. It's really what the doctor ordered. Have you been using your Instant Pot to make your stock?
You know what? It's funny. I haven't, but I often use, I have a bigger pressure cooker. Oh, I have a 10-quart pressure cooker that I often use for stock, because I figure if I'm going to make it,
you might as well make a ton.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I do love I feel like I'm getting closer to doing it in the Instant Pot, because I love the walk away capacity of the Instant Pot.
I like to have a ton of stock made too, but the thing, I guess the Instant Pot, it makes it easier to make smaller amounts more often somehow, more convenient.
Which I also think is a viable option, you know, like that makes a lot of sense to me, that you don't have to store it as much. I think the last time I made stock, I had two chicken carcasses too, where I was like, I've got to make a lot of stock.
Right, right.
Although I could have frozen one, I don't know.
You could have chopped it up and just stuck it in, just crammed it in there. I like a high chicken parts to water ratio. I think you get the most flavorful, gelatinous stock that way. You know, I'm not a fan of a watery stock. I like a stock that turns into chicken jelly. Yeah, me too. Put it in the fridge.
Nothing worse than a watery stock.
I mean.
There are, certainly. But it's been a nice, I feel like it's been a nice winter of sort of broth and stock exploration.
I'm glad you've sort of come around. Have you branched out from chicken? Any other broths or stocks?
I haven't been making many other things lately. I've certainly in the past done other styles. I remember years ago, I went on a kick for a while of making ham stock, which was really great for, you know, like a chicken, or not chicken, potato. Like I would use it for potato soup. So because you get all that smoky meatiness without needing a lot of meat. And so that was something I did for a while. I keep meaning to do more other kinds of stock. So like a Parmesan rind stock or something like that. But I just haven't done it.
Right. Yeah. Chicken stock is really the workhorse of the kitchen, I think. The beef stock is delicious, but I don't know. It's just more trouble to make. I just don't do it very often.
I also feel like with beef stock, it doesn't smell good while it's cooking.
It doesn't smell as good as chicken stock.
Yeah. It smells a little bit more sort of industrial to me in some way.
No, I know what you mean. That's true. Interesting.
But no chicken. And I mean, I cook a lot of chicken, so there's always
carcasses hanging around.
Yeah.
Well, that's, I'm so glad you've come around, Maritha.
Thank you. Me too. It's been really kind of satisfying to discover. And it's nice when you realize that you're not doing it right and you can kind of go and figure it out.
Have you gotten to the happy to drink plain stock with salt out of a mug phase yet?
Only when I'm sick.
Okay. Well, let me know when you get there.
I will.
We're going to talk about something that's basically the polar opposite of like a warm stock now. And that's papaya salad. This might seem like a weird thing to be talking about in the middle of winter, but I've been eating so much of it lately. I just wanted to bring it up. Yeah. Are you a fan?
I am. And it's funny. I really only eat papaya salad when I'm in Portland because I first had papaya salad at Pock Pock in Portland. And it's my cousin Andy's restaurant. And so I associate it.
Also kind of a world famous restaurant.
Kind of, yeah. So, hey, Andy. But yeah, so I, not that he's listening, I associate it with Pock Pock. And so I almost always have it when I'm there. And I don't really have it many other places.
I mean, I've never eaten at Pock Pock, but I have heard Andy interviewed on a lot of radio shows. Yeah. And I can almost guarantee you he does it, you know, the right way with the mortar and pestle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's super authentic. He doesn't do anything in half measures.
The thing about papaya salad that I've learned is that you really need the mortar and pestle because you want to slightly bruise those strips of unripe papaya so that they soak up that delicious dressing, which usually has like lime and fish sauce.
Yeah.
And there's so many herbs in it. That's what I love best, the herbs. I've actually never made this salad, but I am on a mission to do it as soon as my kitchen is reconstituted.
Yeah.
I do need a big serious mortar and pestle, though, because obviously I want to do it the right way, too.
Yeah.
I've had some really right versions, delicious versions lately, and some interesting versions. But I want to tell you the most amazing one I had is at Bottles and Bon Me. Have you been there yet?
I haven't.
It's this new place, newish place on South Street. It's a casual Asian bar food, I would say, with a kind of a lot of special drinks. They have cocktails with a lot of, like, house-made syrups and stuff. I think they're doing their own soda there.
Oh, cool.
They have like a craft beer list, and there's a big section of like you can pick up craft beer to go. But this the food menu is also really, really good, and nothing was more impressive to me than this papaya salad, which started me on my kick. Since then, I've also had it at Liviet, which is that Vietnamese place on Washington and 11th. Circles Thai.
Yep.
Where I cannot recommend it.
Oh, no.
And then I've had it at Rangoon as well, which, like, that's a different style. That's like a Burmese style.
Okay.
It was good, but it was just different.
Yeah.
Have you ever made it?
I haven't. I feel like there are certain things in life that are better had
left to the pros.
Yes. Well, because, again, it is best done in a mortar and pestle. Mm-hmm. And I have a teeny tiny one for grinding spices, but I don't have anything appropriately sized here in my kitchen.
I like it enough where I feel like it will be worth the space. Dan also really, really loves it. And another thing that I've been thinking about as I've been eating them is, you know how like zoodles is all the rage?
Yeah.
That unripened papaya cut into julienne strips, it feels like it could do the same work, you know? Yeah. I haven't really had many unripe papayas in my kitchen, but I really want to experiment with it because it feels like it would be very versatile. It doesn't have, in and of itself, like a ton of flavor. It does have a very hearty, firm texture.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that could be the next zoodle.
I think you might be right. You know, people are spiralizing everything these days or noodling everything. I was at Wegmans recently and they had a whole display case of
It's getting crazy, right?
Of house made. Like they had, you know, five or six kinds of different vegetables that were noodled or spiralized. And then they also had broccoli rice and cauliflower rice and carrot rice. It's like
carrot rice. That's a new one on me.
It was just sort of, you know, the same size and shape as all the others. So it's very interesting, but I think you're right that maybe we need to incorporate an unripened papaya into the noodleization of all vegetables.
Yeah, the noodleization of it. I think it might be less watery than a zucchini.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to play with it someday when I have my
When you have your big, back, beautiful kitchen that's
I'll,
all done.
I'll get on that. I also am not really sure where to shop for unripe papayas, probably an Asian market, I would think.
I would imagine one of the big Asian grocery stores on Washington Avenue would have them.
Yeah. I think that there's possibilities I want to explore there, but none so much as just the straight up papaya salad.
Yeah.
They can get very spicy.
No, they're delicious.
I bet you the one at Pok Pok is spicy.
It is spicy. It's really good though. I mean, I can, even just sitting here, I can kind of muster up the taste and smell memory of eating the papaya salad with sticky rice. Like it is... The textural interplay between those two things and the crunchy, spicy, and then the sticky, slightly sweet of the rice is so good.
You know that it has to be delicious if I feel like eating it half a dozen times in the middle of winter.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold. That salad is cold, but still it's warming because it's spicy and it's like just like really flavorful.
Well, and I think that in winter too, we can sometimes fall into the trap of eating only soft, hot,
hot, mushy things, foods.
And having that counterpoint of crunchy and spicy and sharp next to sort of shredded meat,
yeah,
is a valuable contrast really, and really wakes up your palate.
It can do that. Yeah. So if you guys know of another papaya salad that's I should be eating in Philadelphia or, you know, anywhere, please let us know in the comments. I want to try all the ones I can before I start hashing out my own version.
Yeah. Fun. So, as we all know, I love a good potluck. And so today we're going to talk about potluck clubs. Joy, have you been invited to join any potluck clubs?
No, I have to tell you, the only potlucks I've been to in my life have been yours. And then... For one of my birthdays in my late 20s, I don't know why I thought I held a potluck. I wasn't even into cooking yet. And people are still complaining about it.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Some people brought weird vegan food, according to my family.
People
who really aren't cut out for the kitchen or it was not a success.
Oh, no.
But maybe one day I'll have one that will be very successful.
Well, I mean, my wedding was a potluck, so...
You are invested.
I do love a potluck. I've actually been thinking about starting a potluck club in my apartment building because I just think that'd be fun. And there's a community room. Why not?
Why not?
But so potluck clubs, you know, it depends on the rules of the group, but they can get together on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, a quarterly basis, and they can be, you know... wrapped around a theme or a book.
I love the idea of doing it around a book, sort of like we've seen stories about this,
yeah, you know,
cookbook clubs, which is a related type of club.
It's, yeah,
like potluck based on a cookbook.
Yeah, I know that there's a really active cookbook potluck group in Seattle that I have some friends who participate in. I'm always wishing that we could have something as vibrant and delicious here.
Maybe we can.
I know there's one in Chicago too that does a really good job of it.
We have friends that like to cook.
It's true.
One thing I wonder is, like, how do you – I'm always thinking about the organization. How many people is appropriate?
Well, I think, you know, for some of these cookbook potluck clubs, you know, you can have as many as, like, 40 people who are signed up, and then you maybe get 25 people who participate. But I feel like a cookbook potluck group is such a good way to experience a cookbook because – you know, you're going to get to taste, you know, an average cookbook has between, you know, 80 and 120 recipes. And if you have, you know, 30 people who are all cooking from that book, you're tasting a fairly large percentage of the recipes in the book.
The club in Seattle, do you know enough about its inner workings to know how they prevent duplicates, or do they not even try?
I think that they use some sort of sign-up sheet, so maybe a Google Doc. You can even use a Google Form and make sure that, you know, people are signing up to bring things that no one else is.
That rings my bell. I like that idea.
And then you just, everybody brings it and you get to taste a different recipe. And I mean, I think it sounds like a great way to explore cookbooks and taste other people's food. Because, you know, I think I've said this before on the show. One of the things that I really love about a potluck is that it gives you the opportunity to taste food that doesn't taste like your own cooking. Mm-hmm. Because no matter how many things I make, I have certain stylistic, you know, habits that make everything taste like my food. And so when I get to eat other people's food, it's such a breath of fresh air. I remember once I was at a friend's house and we were talking about making chicken soup. And she just happened to comment that her chicken soup always has a lot of ginger and lime juice in it. And it made me think that, oh, that, you know, then her, that her kids, that to them, that's what chicken soup tasted like. I don't have kids, but, you know, in my household, my chicken soup tastes a certain way, and how, what a breath of fresh air it would be to eat her soup that doesn't taste like my soup. And I feel like potluck clubs and cookbook clubs give you that opportunity to not only taste a cookbook author's way of being, but also then the way in which the food is impacted by each person's stylistic habits.
Yeah, that's true. Although I bet that I think when you cook from a book, or I guess it depends on who you are and how you approach it, but when you cook from a book, hopefully we're not seeing a whole lot of your own personal cooking style. Hopefully we're really getting what the author intended, which, as I have long advised you, I think the way out of a cooking rut or like being sick of your own food is to really cook from other people's recipes.
And I do turn to that when I want to stop having my food taste like my food. But, you know, when life gets busy.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, I'm not cooking from other people's recipes every night of my life. And I guess like my food tastes a certain way. Like I use tons of garlic. I like really rich things. I like really spicy things.
Yeah.
I guess it has like a joy flavor profile.
But yeah,
it's not as big of an issue for me as it is for you.
No, it's true. I'm not complaining about my food, but just
like your food.
There are certain things that happen when you taste something that someone else has cooked where you're like, oh gosh, like here is this flavor world that I don't normally experience. Mm-hmm. Or I remember being at a friend's house once and eating a salad she made, and it was just simply that she put different stuff in her vinaigrette and it made everything taste bright and different from how I normally do it. And that was just, I appreciate that. And I feel like often that happens in restaurants, but you can't quiz the chef at the restaurant about.
Oh, unless you're a restaurant critic, which I used to be, and I would do all the time.
Yeah.
And that is when I realized that I was in the wrong food writing lane, because my whole interview with chefs centered on like how they did what they did and what was in it. And like, I was taking way more notes, and then after we got off the phone, instead of writing my draft, I was like going to the supermarket so that I could do the same thing. Anyway.
That's too funny. But yeah, so for those of our listeners who are in Philadelphia, if you're interested in starting a potluck club.
Oh, are we going
to
do this?
I think we might be. I think we're going to do it. We're going to try to do maybe a quarterly potluck club.
That would be great.
Perhaps centered around a book, but perhaps also centered around a culinary theme at times. So the rules are still to come, but if you're interested, this is our initial query for participants. Yeah. So
let us know.
Come potluck with us. I think we should potluck.
Yeah, it would be great. I'm into it, especially if we're going to organize and like not have replicated dishes and not have 22 salads and 42 cupcakes.
We are going to organize.
Okay.
No potluck that you're involved with, Joy, would be disorganized.
I just don't enjoy that.
It's totally, because you want to have a well-balanced meal.
I don't think that's happened so much at your potluck, because you always take responsibility for like the meal's center of gravity, so to speak.
That is true. And that's part of when you host a potluck, to me, that's part of the responsibility as host is to make sure that you, even if I always think of it as even if no one else shows up, I want to have something I can eat. Mm-hmm. So I always make like a protein and a vegetable so that it feels like, well, even if no one shows up, I've still got like baked chicken legs and a big kale salad.
Right.
that's anyway. A happy dinner for me. So
tell us in the comments. We'll start to organize.
Yeah, we'll make it happen. I think we're going to do it. So at the market, it's wintertime. There's still not a lot of local produce. But one of the things, local items that I've been buying more lately is daisy flour. And this is an organic flour company based in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. I don't believe all the wheat comes from Pennsylvania, but it is nice to support a local mill. And it's really great flour. And the reason I've been buying more of it is because I've been baking more bread. I have been grinding some of my own flour, but I was afraid I was beginning to burn out the motor in my KitchenAid.
Oh, wow.
With the little flour mill that you can buy for the KitchenAid mixer. The mixer develops like that kind of electrical sweet smell.
The wheezing sound.
Yeah. So yeah. It's made me a little nervous. So I started looking for other really good flours to use on my sort of sourdough journey here. And one of the ones that I came across was daisy flour. And I've known about it for a long time.
We covered them in Edible Philly at one point.
And what's cool about them, I mean, it's not like a continuous company that's been around for ages, but they have deep roots. The mill that they use has been the site of a flour mill since 1740, which is kind of amazing.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And the flour label has been around since 1890. And then they were closed up in 1985. And then the company brought them back in 2000. And so they've been going consistently for the last, I guess that's 17 years now. And it's, you know, it's pricey because it's organic and smaller company, but to me, the quality has been really great and I've been enjoying using it. Have you cooked with it?
No. Do you find the flour quirky?
I wouldn't use it for like cake baking where you want a really fine, close texture, but for sort of hearty breads, it's been really nice.
You know that baking is not really my
That's
thing,
true.
In the kitchen. But I had heard, I think one of the things that put me off buying it is that I've heard that it's a little quirky to work with. It's not as uniform as like King Arthur flour, like Whole Foods 365 organic flour. Those are the two that I buy.
Yeah. No. Well, I've been buying their all-purpose whole wheat. And it's...
Which to me is a contradiction in terms. What is that?
It's essentially... So it's the combination of their bread flour and... I think it's their cake flour where they have these two very, like a hearty high protein and a smoother whole wheat flour because
you get a whole wheat bread product basically.
Yeah.
Quality. Although it's not 100% whole wheat.
Correct.
Okay.
You know, I'm also combining it with some regular all purpose in the bread baking process because I have not developed my skill base deeply enough to be able to work with do a 100% whole wheat sourdough bread without it turning into a
brick.
Rock.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I'm not
and
too
where
critical.
Are you buying it?
I have been getting it at Fair Food Farm Stand, although they're undergoing some transition right now, so it's not always there. And sometimes I've ordered it online.
Well, I think that about does it for this week's installment of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show and to Sal Rosenbaum for designing our logo. Thanks to Raina Rose for providing our music. And thanks to PhillyCam, where we've been recording lately. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, please subscribe via iTunes or on your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. And please, if you haven't already, sign up for our weekly newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.